from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Sinclair Broadcast Group makes no secret of its politics, with 62 TV stations carrying ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox programming across the country. Sinclair refused to air a Nightline segment in which Ted Koppel read the names of American soldiers killed in Iraq. It pulled Bill Maher off the air after his controversial remarks on the war on terror. It regularly runs pro-Bush editorials, and the Sinclair brothers are significant financial contributors to the Bush campaign. But 10 days ago, when Sinclair signaled it would air a highly contested film on John Kerry and Vietnam just days before the election, the kickback, political and financial, was powerful. Democrats howled, media watchers worried about the increasingly concentrated ownership of media in America and the political consequences. Sinclair's own Washington bureau chief spoke out and was fired. Defenders say, get over it. It's the First Amendment. Tonight on Point, the Sinclair saga and the political implications of media consolidation in America. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Is this Exhibit A of media concentration run amok? Is it really any different than having Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 in the theaters? How do you read fairness and the First Amendment here? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin in Maryland, Baltimore tonight, where Sinclair is based, with David Folkenflik, who covers the media for the Baltimore Sun. We'll hear later from a former head of the FCC and from Jonathan Lieberman, the Sinclair Washington bureau chief, fired this week by Sinclair. But first, to Baltimore and David Folkenflik. David, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
I'm glad to join you.
Wonderful to have you. You've been following this story, and I wish you'd just give us a sense, first of all, of exactly where this stands. Ten days ago, we heard that there was a film, a documentary, I'm not sure what to call it, called Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal. Now we understand it's supposed to be something else that Sinclair airs tomorrow. What's going to actually be aired? Do you know?
Well, I have a sense. I don't think we'll know until the product's put on the air. As officials at Sinclair have repeatedly pointed out, it's a work in progress. About 10 days ago, as you say, the Los Angeles Times first wrote about the plans as relayed by various anonymous station executives throughout the country for Sinclair stations to air a show based on Stolen Honor, the documentary you alluded to. Ever since, it's never been quite clear that they were going to show the entire 40-odd minute documentary. Just for a little background for your listeners, it was made by a journalist named Carlton Sherwood, himself a Vietnam War vet, a Marine who had a very bloody tour of duty there. Who personally felt affronted by the criticism that then-Lieutenant John Kerry gave in 1971 in nationally televised testimony before Congress about the atrocities that he had been told had been committed there by U.S. troops. He and many other veterans, many prisoners of war, felt that it was a great betrayal. What's likely to air, I believe starting on Friday, is a show that is built around those sort of incendiary allegations that are at the core of Sherwood's documentary. So they'll show some of it. They've done, as I understand it, some of their own interviews with POWs involved with it. They've done some interviewing around it to talk about the ways in which media selects stories amidst the presidential campaign. This is a story that executives at Sinclair, who, as you've pointed out, are quite, sincerely conservative, feel have been underplayed by the media, whom they believe to be overwhelmingly liberal.
So now they're looking to air something called a POW story of politics, pressure, and the media. And this will run where? Give us a sense of just how widespread the Sinclair network, if that's the right word, of television stations is, David.
Well, it's not quite a network because they have agreements with all six sort of major networks, the four that you mentioned, as well as UPN and WB. So they don't dictate the primetime programming, the networks with which they're affiliated are. But it is an extraordinary chain of stations, unrivaled in America. They own or operate or have substantial agreements with 62 stations across the country. No one else comes close. And it will air in markets all across the country. Now, this is their acquisitions and their reach has grown largely outside the media radar screen in large measure because much of what they've done have been in smaller markets. I mean, their larger markets have tended to be cities such as St. Louis and Pittsburgh mm-hmm. and Baltimore, which are, you know, none of which break the top 10.
But a lot more here, Madison, Minneapolis, Nashville, Oklahoma City, Raleigh, Sacramento, Peoria, lots
exactly.
just
so
under
Flint,
that sort of
Michigan,
bigger.
Michigan, mm-hmm. Tallahassee, mm-hmm. places, you know, smaller metro regions. They often are lesser rated stations. And I say this not to denigrate it, but because one of the things that Sinclair has done is that it's consciously decided in its news programming to market itself or brand itself as a conservative alternative to the network affiliates throughout the country. They figure, why be a smaller station in a smaller market that is, you know, the fifth station to cover a three-alarm fire? Why not instead cover the foibles of, you know, liberal Hollywood stars or the political elites in Washington?
Well, look at the growth of Sinclair and how remarkable it is and how it kind of speaks to the time of media concentration that we're in. I wish you could give us a sense first, David, of what it is about the material in Stolen Honor, in a POW story, that has Democrats so up in arms. What have you seen? What's known about what's coming here?
Well, I haven't watched it in its entirety. It's available on the internet for a fee. That's how it's been generally distributed. Mm-hmm. I've seen excerpts online. There are very emotional appeals by these former American prisoners of war held in Vietnam who allege that, you know, Senator Kerry's testimony before Congress was used by the North Vietnamese to torture them while they were held in captivity and indeed inspired additional torture as he described the atrocities committed, things along the lines of My Lai, but also other widespread practices that were actually recounted by other veterans. Democrats say, A, that, you know, there's nothing tangible to prove that these allegations are somehow grounded other than the, you know, deep felt emotions and feelings of betrayal behind them. Others say that it's inherently unfair to devote an hour-long special to this very topic 10 days before the election without significant rebuttal or without significant, you know, counter time given for Kerry supporters to talk about completely different topics important and dear to the senator. It seems very loaded. After all, Sinclair, as John Lieberman, the now fired Washington bureau chief, pointed
out. Who we'll
out,
speak to in a moment, yeah.
Indeed. You know, one of his key points is, hey, we haven't devoted an hour to the war in Iraq. We haven't devoted an hour to the economy. We haven't devoted an hour to anything. To pick this in isolation, you know, within days of the election seems, you know, an attempt in some ways to sway voters beyond the typical editorials, beyond your typical news judgment.
Mm. And the Sinclair stations don't have a choice about this, I guess. The word comes down from suburban Baltimore. You will set aside the normal programming at such and such an hour and run this package.
That's right. Now, to be fair, you know, I mean, the Fox network also owns a number of its own stations in Washington, New York, L.A., and other places. Mm-hmm. And if they decide they want a show to air, they order their stations to do the same thing. And so they are behaving like a corporation as opposed to a decentralized media company.
Tell us, where did Sinclair Broadcasting broadcast come from? It was one station near Baltimore not so long ago, and it's exploded to 62. How did it happen? Who's behind it?
Well, the Sinclair Company was named for its founder, Julian Sinclair Smith, who was a figure here in Baltimore. It sort of evolved from a very small, modest company that had radio holdings and television stations, some recording studios and things like that, into this company. It's been highly leveraged. One of the things they've done is acquired certain kinds of technology and television property. You know, it's a company that, to be fair, is deeply in debt and that sort of has low profit yields, and that dynamic's reflected in its and its stock price on the NASDAQ. But the Smith brothers, who own the company, you know, own the overwhelming majority of controlling stock. They are, you know, believers in what they're doing. They are actually, you know, pretty innovative in some of their technological developments. They've been pushing for a very high-quality form of high-definition television with the FCC. And they have aggressively pursued a growth strategy that has involved essentially at times ignoring certain kinds of FCC limitations on the number of stations that they can control in markets.
And are they still expanding? Are they still counting on the FCC to keep a green light up for them to expand?
Well, I mean, sometimes they haven't really waited. They've done it through these marketing agreements in which they run companies for nominally other companies. They run stations that are not only owned by other companies. Some of these stations have very close ties with the Smith family members.
And this has let them have more than one station in a given market.
Well, let them certainly control more than one station in a given market. That's certainly the case here in Baltimore and elsewhere.
And how did Jonathan Lieberman get fired, their Washington bureau chief, young man, 28, 29 years old? What happened there?
John Lieberman, and he can talk about it a bit himself, but he's 29 years old. He's a Northwestern journalism graduate. He's worked for the company for about 4.5 years. He started with Sinclair as an investigative reporter at WBFF, which is a Fox affiliate and Sinclair's flagship based here in Baltimore. He's been down in Washington for over a year as their bureau chief, and he's been all over, covered stories in Iraq and Cuba, covered the top political stories of the day for them. He has developed qualms over time. He feels that the story selection by Sinclair has been tilted strongly to the right to favor President Bush, to be against Senator Kerry. And he's expressed these qualms internally over time. The Nightline decision that you alluded to earlier, mm-hmm. I think, disturbed him as well. He and I have talked over time. And at a meeting on Sunday, he raised strong objections to the plans to show this documentary under the rubric of a news program. He said, at best, perhaps it should be labeled commentary because it seems so much based on opinion rather than fact.
David Folkenflik, stand by. We'll hear directly from Jonathan Lieberman in a moment. But first, I want to turn to New York, where we are joined by Reed Hunt. He is former chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, from 1993 to 97. He's author of You Say You Want a Revolution, a story of information age politics. Reed Hunt, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
I'd like to know what you see in this Sinclair broadcast story around the special that's supposed to air in the next day or two.
It's a special smear job that no broadcaster has ever done anything like before in any presidential election in the history of our country.
And what sets it apart in your view?
Because every single broadcaster since TV was invented has tried to play fair, has tried to say, if we're going to run such and such that's against one candidate, then we'll run something else that's against the other candidate. Two-party system, two sides to the story, two different points of view, one up, one down, one in, one out, one right, one left. That's the way everyone has played it. They felt that that's what their audience deserves. They have felt that that was a fair way to proceed, and that is the reason why the public has given free airwaves to broadcasters and all kinds of other special breaks. And this is literally the first broadcaster group in the history of television that has decided to be utterly slanted, utterly one way. This particular group happens to be anti-Kerry, but you know what? It really doesn't matter whether it's Annie Kerry or Annie Bush. It's not fair, and nobody else has ever done anything like it.
And how do you see this in relationship, Reed Hunt, to media consolidation, the ownership of more and more outlets in fewer hands?
Well, I think that people often say, in any particular city or town, there's lots of different competing points of view. But, in fact, there is nobody else who's running a pro-Kerry program that's equally long and equally pungent.
What about Fahrenheit 9/11 in the theaters?
Isn't fair.
What about Michael Moore in the theaters?
Because it's not on broadcast TV, because the total size of the theater audience is trivial compared to a broadcast audience, because everybody knows that TV is still the most important medium to reach people in the country. Here's the problem here. Why should the public give broadcasters free access to the airwaves? We charge money for the cellular companies to use them. Why should we give free access if they're just going to play it one way? And what I think will happen here is that a Sinclair, if they proceed down this path, will find that no one wants to treat them the way that broadcasters have always been treated. In fact, they always say one bad apple spoils a bunch. It may well be that no broadcasters get the same deals in the future that they've gotten in the past, and that the whole industry ends up suffering because Sinclair is biased.
On the back of one hour-long broadcast coming up, we understand tomorrow. Reed Hunt, David Folkenflik, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about Sinclair Broadcast's Election Eve swipe at John Kerry, and the political implications of media consolidation in America. What do you think? Is this Exhibit A of media concentration run amok? Is it fair to run politically charged, allegedly one-sided video on public airwaves 10 days before a presidential campaign? Or is this just the freedom of the press? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Sinclair Broadcasts, election eve airing of a new show, a documentary, a propaganda piece, call it what you will. It's very critical of John Kerry. It will go on, 40, 60, not quite sure yet, stations tomorrow night, in all likelihood, around the country, owned by one broadcasting company outside Baltimore. What do you think about this whole scene? Is this one media magnate's private crusade against John Kerry, or is this the freedom of the press? And with more media consolidation, is this the future? Private political agendas on public airwaves? Or are the complaints here overwrought? Is this just part of the hurly-burly of the free democratic process? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight by David Folkenflik. He's a media reporter for the Baltimore Sun. And from New York by Reed Hunt, former chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. Reed Hunt, a lot of noise in the days since news of this came out, the Democratic National Committee asking for action from the Federal Election Commission, saying this is a kind of in-kind gift to the Bush campaign. A lot of Democratic senators saying the FCC ought to investigate whether this is public use of airwaves. But is there really any law or regulation being broken here? Is there any real recourse here?
Well, you know, it would be awful nice, and I mean this quite sincerely, if the chairman of the FCC would investigate the matter, the Federal Communications Commission, find out why that reporter got fired, find out exactly what is going to be shown here, take a look at it, and if it in fact is what everybody says it is, which is a smear job against John Kerry, then order that the station afterwards provide equal time before the election is held to give John Kerry a chance to get his message across. You know, I think Americans normally like fair play. They don't want to see a baseball game where one side does all the batting, although that kind of looked that way with the Red Sox last night. But they don't want to see a basketball game where one side gets the ball all the time, and it's not anyone's sense of fair play if the media is completely slanted against one candidate.
You're not saying the media overall in the country are wholly slanted against one candidate, are you?
I think there are some serious questions, but that's not the topic. The point here is that Sinclair is totally slanted, and no other TV show in the region is going to give Kerry equal time to rebut, and Sinclair isn't giving John Kerry equal time to rebut. That's not fair.
Sinclair says this isn't slanted. This is just our view of the news, and this is, you know, that's healthy. That's what the First Amendment guarantees.
Yeah, you know, you believe that and you think that we haven't had any job loss in the last 4 years. You know, you believe that and, you know, frankly, we would have to question your relationship to reality. I mean, Sinclair has never made any bones about the fact that they are the strongest possible supporter of George Bush, and they fired this reporter who had a sense of journalistic fair play. But here's my point. They should go ahead and put that show on. They should just give John Kerry equal time to respond.
Reed Hunt, let me ask you, you were chairman of the FCC. There was once something called the Fairness Doctrine. What was that and what happened to it? Is it in play here now or not?
Yeah, that was a specific regulation that talked about the specific amount of time and how you looked at the shows, and everybody thought that was a little bit too picky. I'm not asking for anything detailed. I'm just saying an equal amount of time, let the Kerry campaign do what they want with it.
But you know, the FCC, of course, the chairmanship and preponderance of I guess, members and a vote swing, depending on the party of the president. It's Republican right now.
Well, the White House picks the chairman, and the White House can tell the chairman pretty much what to do. And what you see here is that they've told him to go ahead and smile while Sinclair smears John Kerry.
So where do you think the FCC is headed? Are we likely to see more of this?
You know, if we see more of this, it is a disgrace for democracy. If we see more of this, the whole broadcasting industry is going to very, very much regret that other stations did not create fair play. If we see more of this, our country is going to start wondering whether or not it's possible to hold a fair election. I hope we don't see more of this. I think the good news here is that most of the American people understand this isn't fair, and a lot of the advertisers are unhappy about it. And, you know, maybe Sinclair is just too stuck in its own, you know, its own worldview to understand what everybody's unhappy about. But You know, it would be awful nice if other broadcasters were to step up and create fair play here.
Reed Hunt, I know we've got to let you go, but thank you very much
for
joining us tonight.
Me.
Reed Hunt, former chairman of the FCC. David Folkenflik, what can you see about what price, if any, Sinclair is paying here? We see they have paid a price in their stock price. It's down.
Their stock has taken a real beating. It was down this week to, I think, it's low for a year. You know, if you compared it with comparable stocks, it really took an incredible plunge, more than, you know, 10 or 12 times as much of a drop as others have experienced in 2004. In addition, you know, you've got some shareholders making noises, some institutional shareholders, big groups of them. You've got some advertisers saying they don't want to advertise in the show. They're airing the entire program commercial free, so it's not clear that's going to have a huge effect. But, you know, the fact that advertisers are wary reflect their deep ambivalence at best about being associated with something that could alienate a decent size of their possible consuming audience. I did want to address a couple of things that Reed raised. Mm-hmm. The idea that the FCC chairman could certainly investigate why John Lieberman was fired, it's pretty direct. He can tell you about it. But it's because he and I talked on Sunday and mm-hmm. I published an article in Monday's paper directly expressing his deep, you know, dismay at the plan Sinclair had. He said he thought it wasn't fair. He thought it was biased. He thought it was propaganda. And they pretty much fired him a few hours later. In addition, you know, you talk about the question of fairness. The family that controls Sinclair and Mark Hyman, the chief editorialist, who's a senior figure there,
who we were supposed to have on tonight, and he called late in the day to say he's lost his voice with all of his talking about this today. So
I will say I spoke to him a day or two ago, and he had what sounded like laryngitis.
Pretty scratchy.
It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, so fair.
You know, the company's leaders feel very strongly that the media, the establishment media, my newspaper, other mainstream newspapers, you know, National Public Radio, the major networks, are so overwhelmingly liberal that they are, in a sense, serving as a counterbalance, not necessarily purely balanced on their own terms, but serving as a counterweight in opposition to the rest of the media.
In the larger
and
environment.
And in fact, that's, you know, that's one of the ways in which they're defining themselves both as a brand and in terms of their own deeply held beliefs. So to them, the idea that this has been utterly overlooked by the rest of the media, in their estimation, means that they want to devote as much time as possible to it. John points out, hey, we covered this as a news story in two segments. And they say, well, we need to give this adequate ventilation in a way that will get it some attention, as indeed they've done.
Let's talk with John Lieberman. He was Washington bureau chief for Sinclair until this week when he was fired after he voiced his concerns that Sinclair was preempting programming to air what we'll let him describe how he saw this show. John Lieberman joins us from Baltimore. John, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
It's good to be with you. Sorry about your job. Tell us exactly what happened, Jonathan.
Well, Dave explained it pretty well as I related to him this weekend. But I'll tell you, for months, Tom, I've been complaining to the higher-ups in my former company, that I felt that we weren't doing a good job at being fair and objective at presenting the news. I felt that the editorial department was bleeding over into the news department. I felt that the news department was doing too much in the way of opinion work. And when this idea of stolen honor was first batted around, I emailed the CEO of the company and I said, you know what, if we air this documentary, and at that point I was hoping they would at least call it commentary, but I said, if we air this documentary, it's going to have a huge impact on my ability in Washington to balance out our political stories, because none of the Democrats are going to want to talk to us, and nobody really, no moderates are going to talk to us either. We were having trouble even before all of this getting the left side of the political spectrum to even come on the air with us simply because of the company's reputation.
And what was Sinclair's reply to that, Jonathan?
Well, Sinclair's firing you.
I didn't get
a reply from the CEO, and I had been complaining for the past 8 months about this. I did have a meeting with the CEO about a month ago, this was before the whole stolen honor issue, and I was told that I should try to model my news reports more after the commentaries that were being done. That was close to the last straw for me, as David knows, but then this meeting last Sunday where we were called in and told that we would be doing a one-hour mandatory news special based around the documentary Stolen Honor, I stood up and I said, look, our job as journalists is to be credible. Our job is to present objective an objective take on proven facts, and how could we, in good faith and with the public trust in mind, how could we lend the title news to this documentary or to even airing portions of it?
So, John, what's the fear as a news person that you have? I mean, Sinclair has 62 stations. That's a lot of coverage. We read 18 or 20% of the country covered with that. Do you see them changing course at all, or where are they headed with their news delivery?
No. They're not going to change course at all because the attitude in the company from above is they feel they're invincible. They feel they can put anything on the air that they want to. They can call it whatever they want to call it, including news, and I just couldn't stay knowing that philosophy, and I've seen it unfold over the past 8 months or so, and somebody had to stand up. And let me tell you, Tom, there are dozens of other people inside of that company, very good journalists that I know personally, that also want to stand up and do the same thing, but they are afraid, and I don't blame them. You know, you have families to feed, financial concerns, and if they stand up and say something, they'll get fired. I'm not at all saying that I'm a victim here. I mean, I take responsibility for what I did. I acknowledged from the get-go that there could be consequences for this. I was a little naive. I didn't think that I was going to get fired. I thought maybe reprimanded or suspended because I have been a very good employee for the past 4.5 years. But again, that's why more people don't stand up.
You know, Sinclair people, Mark Hyman has been quoted saying that their goal of Sinclair was to get actually John Kerry to come in and reply to the allegations in this film, that they were trying to be balanced in that way. What do you make of that?
I think that that's probably lip service. I think that when the pressure got hot on them, then they started to go to the campaign and say, you know, we'd really like some sort of a reply. But if you look at the track record of Sinclair, even the news reporting, and that's what I've been saying all along, the news reporting during this campaign is clearly gone to one side. I have specific examples of stories where a no comment was fine if it was from the Kerry Edwards campaign, but the managing editor who was in charge would wait around for hours in order to get an actual comment from the Bush-Cheney campaign on a perceived negative story toward them. This was the kind of tone that they set in the newsroom, and so I'm not surprised that John Kerry doesn't want to come on under Sinclair's control. And when you say that Sinclair, you know, was allowing equal time, I'm not even quite sure that that's the case. I think the Kerry folks, at least from what I've read and people I've talked to, they wanted equal time, meaning they could control their own message. They didn't want to talk in the context, I don't think, of this documentary, which is based, you know, on allegations as documentaries are.
And you raised that concern and complaint publicly, and you are now the ex-Washington bureau chief for Sinclair. But we're glad you're with us, Jonathan Lieberman and David Folkenflik of the Baltimore Sun. I want to begin to bring our callers in. They've been waiting patiently. We're at 1-800-423-8255. E.G. is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, E.G. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I think it's kind of funny. I get the gist that most of your callers are pro Kerry. I would just guess, but nobody has even mentioned CBS's airing with Dan Rather of those papers against President Bush that
famously about the National Guard that turned out to be fake.
It was a horrible airing. It was on 60 Minutes, was it not? Which is one of my favorite shows.
Right.
And I just thought it was in bad taste that a major network would air something like that and not have their facts straight. And then now, this is one little thing against Kerry out of the mudslide or landslide against Bush for the last 3 months.
So Reed Hunt was saying that, or perhaps it was David Folkenflik, that Sinclair sees the overall media environment as slanted toward Kerry, sees this as a kind of a balancing program here. Sounds like you might agree, E.G.
Yes, I completely agree. Most of your media stations, even NPR, which I listen to religiously, airs a lot of pro-Kerry type stuff. And I mean, although you guys do give a balanced input, like today with Kerry and Bush, both speakers coming on, I thought was great. But for the most, other than Fox, everybody's pretty much pro-Kerry, anti-Bush on everything they report.
E.G., we've got the view, and let us pick it up. Thanks so much for calling. John Lieberman, you worked inside Sinclair. You know, this is what they say in no small part. And now you hear a listener saying the same thing. How do you respond to that?
Well, I want to respond to the Dan Rather situation first. Of course, journalists were upset about what happened with Dan Rather as well. I mean, you know, we don't live in a bubble. We can't, you know, we also thought, or at least I thought, that there were problems with obvious problems with the story that CBS aired as well. But two wrongs don't make a right, you know, and I don't think I honestly don't think that by airing this documentary in full or in part, Sinclair is using the broadcast airwaves to serve the public interest.
Even if they see themselves as balancing a bias that's elsewhere?
Yeah, they see that, but they go too far with it. If they felt that they needed to balance bias that they saw elsewhere, then why not air the entire documentary and call it commentary, put it on the air, that way you get the entire documentary out.
Yep.
But please don't call it news. My argument the whole time has been, don't call news something that's not news. And a major problem at Sinclair all along has been the story choice. I'm all for doing stories that may be perceived as right-leaning stories, stories that may be perceived as left-leaning stories, but do them in equal share. I mean, when you do a half-hour local news broadcast every night, and the majority of the time every night deals with pro-administration stories and anti-John Kerry stories, you're not serving the viewers in these, you know, in these 38 markets where Sinclair broadcasts.
Got it. Let's get one more call before the break. Chris is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes. My point is just simply that, and I am a Kerry supporter, I just heard his comment about it's not serving the viewers. I think that you can always turn the television as far as to pick a real news. Obviously, that's not, you know, that's slanted one way. My point, another point that I had was simply that if it's a corporation, I've seen a problem with them showing the documentary. I think it should be considered an in-kind contribution, and that, if I'm not mistaken, would be an illegal contribution, and that's where the problem really comes in.
We've got it, and that's exactly the Democratic National Committee's complaint. David Folkenflik, on that point, any response from the Federal Election Commission? Is there any chance that there's going to be government action here, or this is going to go ahead?
I wouldn't hold your breath. The FEC doesn't move quickly, and it doesn't tend to move fairly forcefully. So that's unlikely. I mean, to my mind, Democratic politicians weighed in on that, and it was more of an attempt to register the level of their dismay than to expect to get effective action.
So more really to make a comment, John Lieberman, it doesn't sound like an organization at Sinclair that's likely to change course here. They've got their compass set.
No, this company is not going to change course. If anything, it's going to get even worse because they're only going to start hiring people, I believe, who go along with the company's political agenda and are willing to skew the news. That's my fear. I think the firing of myself, while it was justified, I did break company policy by going outside of the company because I felt so strongly about it. But I think it sends a chilling message to other people who are going to come to work for Sinclair that unless you do everything that you're told and tell the stories the way the company wants them told and you don't let the truth get in the way, those are the only sorts of people who are going to begin working at Sinclair. And this thing is going to – it's already started on a slippery slope. And I'm afraid that there's no stopping that slope.
John Lieberman, David Folkenflik, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. You can join us. What do you think? Is this Exhibit A of media concentration run amok? 1-800-423-8255. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Sinclair Broadcasts, controversial election eve programming headed to 40, 50, maybe 60 stations about John Kerry. Kerry supporters call it a smear. Sinclair says we're exercising our First Amendment right. Maybe we're balancing the big American media picture. What do you think? With more media consolidation, is this the future? Private political agendas on public airwaves, or are the complaints, is the uproar overwrought? Is this just part of the First Amendment rough and tumble of the free democratic process? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking tonight with David Folkenflik. He covers media for the Baltimore Sun. And Jonathan Lieberman, who was until very recently, just this week, Washington bureau chief for Sinclair. He was fired by Sinclair after speaking up about what he saw as unfair in this particular production. We are joined now by a couple more voices from Los Angeles. Ernest Miller, he's a fellow at the Yale Law School Information Society Project. Ernest Miller, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
good to be here.
And also with us from Baltimore, Jesse Walker. He's associate editor and columnist at Reason Magazine. It's a libertarian monthly. He's author of Rebels on the Air, an alternative history of radio in America. Jesse Walker, thank you for joining us.
No, thanks for having me.
Ernest Miller, let me come first to you. We've been hearing from Reed Hunt, former FCC chairman, that this is an outrage, and it sort of marks the end of any semblance of fairness on the American airwaves. We're hearing a more nuanced story, maybe, from our other guest tonight, and from our callers, some questioning about exactly what's right and what's wrong here. How do you see the airing of this? You're studying information issues, democracy issues. Is this right, wrong, outrage?
Well, I have to say first that I don't think what Sinclair is doing is an example of good journalism. But I think it's sort of inevitable given the current regulatory landscape used for broadcast. I think that we're seeing some of the inevitable results of the way we've allowed people to obtain licenses and, in fact, the very fact that we licensed the airwaves in the first place. So I'm upset with what they're doing, but I think given what the basic landscape for the law is, we should have expected it.
As a public policy issue, then, and you're looking at information issues and how they interact with democracy, do we have a problem here? Do we need something fixed, or is this just First Amendment expression, and some people will find it a smear, and others will find it gratifying, and on we go, no problem?
Well, I think we do have a First Amendment problem here. I think we have a problem when you are licensing broadcasters, and they're limited to a very few number of organizations, that you're going to inevitably run into problems where people are going to complain about the content, whether it's biased for the right wing or the left wing. If we had a federal newspaper commission, and that commission was saying how many newspapers could be in a particular city and then was licensing those who could own the press, we would also have a similar problem. We need to change our entire regulatory structure when it comes to broadcast TV.
Are you saying regulate less?
Regulate differently.
These are public
areas.
Please go ahead.
Well, for example, no one cares how many websites a particular company owns. And the reason for that is that even though the telephone company may own the wires, they don't control the content that comes over the internet to your computer. And so we need to separate broadcast regulation from controlling the transport medium and who controls the content.
But these are public airwaves. These are public airwaves, right? And the traditional argument has been they're public airwaves, and so there's certain kind of civic expectations here.
Well, if you take a look at the cell phone companies, those are use public airwaves as well. And yet the cell phone companies don't regulate how you use your cell phone, really. They don't say who can speak on a cell phone or what they can say. And so we've separated control over the transport medium from what the content is. And I think we can do a similar thing with television.
Jesse Walker, join us here. How do you see the flap over Sinclair's broadcast?
Well, first of all, I think the last speaker made a lot of good points about how a lot of this becomes inevitable when you bring the government into the role of deciding who can speak over the airwaves in the first place. But I think, you know, I'm willing to stipulate that Sinclair has bad news judgment, and I don't know whether it'll be a good program or not, but I strongly suspect I won't like it. But what outrages me is that people are trying to suppress it. I mean, to listen to the way some people are speaking, the most horrifying thing that could possibly happen is that someone would express an opinion about a presidential candidate during a presidential campaign. I think that's insane. And if you look at the complaint that the Democratic Party made with the Federal Election Commission, they're trying to take this media exemption to the Federal Election Commission's restrictions on electioneering and make it wider. They're trying to set precedents that could come back and make things more difficult for a pro-democratic documentary in the future.
Now, let me ask you, Jesse, we've got Jonathan Lieberman with us. He was Washington bureau chief for Sinclair. He's looking at this and saying, you know what, this just isn't news, though that's how it's being presented. Now, if we have an increasingly concentrated ownership of American media, and we do, and we get people pumping out stuff that just isn't news, let's just say, for the purpose of the conversation, it's straight propaganda. Isn't there a public interest in guarding against that? What happens to democracy if public airwaves are just pumping out propaganda?
Well, what happens to democracy if the government can decide what is news, what is propaganda, and what falls in between? I mean, my favorite a news-related program on TV is The Daily Show, which announces itself as fake news. I'm glad it's on cable and not on these so-called public airwaves so that it's not being regulated, you know, under these guidelines if someone feels that it's being too pro-carry. I mean, it's and this is not a media consolidation issue. You can make arguments about, you know, whether Sinclair owns too many stations or not, and I mean, 76% of the country can't receive any of their broadcasts.
But we wouldn't be concerned if it was only a station or two. It is the fact that it's 62 stations they own that has everybody's attention, isn't it?
Yeah, and 40 of them are gonna air this. But I mean, the fact is, and so 24% of the country will have the option of watching, which they may or may not do. But I mean, even if you accept for the sake of argument that 62 stations is too many, what is the remedies that are being proposed have nothing to do with whether Sinclair can. You know, owns too many stations. I mean, the FEC precedent could be used just as easily against an independently owned nonprofit station. Even the effort that some people are trying to talk about to strip Sinclair of their licenses or some of their licenses, it doesn't have anything to do with the idea that the company has too many of them. It has to do with the fact that it's using those licenses to broadcast controversial speech. And again, that can be used against a small network, a left-wing or right-wing network. I mean, it's been done to the Pacifica network in the past, which is, you know, five stations very far to the left. And to set more precedents for this kind of censorship, I think, would be, you know, disastrous for free expression and for self-government.
David Folkenflik, jump in here with us, if you would.
Sure.
We hear a certain expectation that when you turn to a news program on the public airwaves, there'll be some sense of fairness there. But
sure.
Then we're hearing the argument, well, why not just let it be wide open free?
Well, I mean, there are these competing mandates or desires here. People have a sense of expectation from broadcast, which is sort of a vestigial holdover of the days where there were really only a tiny number of stations you could get. You know, there would be three stations and they'd get 90% of the audience.
Right.
And the notion was they had to hew very carefully to this very center approach so that they didn't – A, they didn't alienate people, and B, that, you know, because they were so dominant that they had to be fair. You know, it is a little funny that when you think about it that cable channels, simply by virtue of the technology that gets them into your house – are regulated differently or conceived of differently than a broadcast station.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When Jesse talks about the notion of censorship, you know, any journalist, self-respecting journalist, would take umbrage at the idea that somehow the government should step in and prevent Sinclair from showing this. However, the notion that people couldn't preemptively object to it, having seen the video or having at least screened some of the content of it, and say, you know what, this is not based – the core of the program is based on a premise which so far has not been proven, that John Kerry's testimony has somehow in 1971 led to the additional and prolongation torture of mm-hmm. American POWs.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been shown to be the case.
David.
So the competing things when you talk about consolidation is, you know, on the one hand, is government going to dictate to, you know, station holders what they can put on the air? Or on the other hand, are things going to be so consolidated that major corporations essentially can dictate what you the very few choices you have to watch.
And even on the eve of a presidential election, very consequential for the country. So many callers want to get in, I really have to turn to them. Mike's calling from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi.
What's on your mind, Mike?
Well, it just seems like things have been snowballing and it's been, you know, getting dirtier and dirtier and less truth and less truth. And I don't think our founding fathers had this type of thing in mind, and it seems to me that this is just spitting in the face of honesty and democracy. And my 8-year-old turns on the TV and watches a show, and it's labeled as news, and he sees this, and to him, this is true, when really, you know, it's not. And I just don't think that just because someone has a lot of money and they own a lot of stations, that they have the right to oppose their view and their convictions on us because we happen to be sitting at home, you know, watching the TV. There ought to be something that holds them to a, you know, to a fair point. Mike,
we've got it, and thanks very much for your call. John Lieberman, that sounds like a listener who wants the kind of news that you want to deliver, that you lost your job over wanting to deliver.
Right. Well, that's all I've ever argued for Sinclair to do is just let the journalists do the news. Let's do a credible job. Let's be objective. Let's be fair. That's really all I want. That's all I want out of this. That's the only reason why I spoke out. And you know, that's that.
But you're hearing this argument tonight. There's a welter of voices out there. Let's not clamp down on anybody's. Let's give some free rein here.
And I understand that argument, and you know, that's why I'm not against airing this documentary, of course. I mean, they have the right, but just label it as such. Just tell it, you know, show it and tell it for what it is, which is not fact, as David just said a moment ago. It's based on assertions that haven't been proven. So I just, my big concern is what we're calling news these days, and I think journalists need to step up and, you know, and just have the voices heard.
Taylor's calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. Hi, Taylor, you're on the air. Hello, Taylor, are you there? Sounds like we might have lost Taylor. Let's get another call here. Scott is calling from Mendon, Massachusetts. Hello, Scott. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I recall earlier in the program that it was stated that Sinclair has made it known that they are the conservative alternative. Is that true?
Yes, we did hear that, and they don't make much bone about it.
So, you know, in other words, they're putting it out there. Unlike, I believe, the major networks that don't. And, you know, hide behind this neutrality when in reality they're not. And at least Sinclair is coming out and saying, hey, you know, take us for what we are. This is what we are. If you don't like it, shut it off.
Well,
Austin, you know, had multiple newspapers at one time. And if you didn't like one, you switched to another one. I don't think it should be any different for TV. And the idea that they should be some mandate is ludicrous. If you don't like that particular show, you change it. If it says it's news, you know, it's time for some people to do some research, maybe. Thank you, gentlemen.
Scott, we've got it. Ernest Miller, if we go down that road, where does a democracy end up if any news show can have any depth of bias and present it, you know, at throw weight, at critical times in an electoral process? What are people supposed to have confidence in? How could people have faith in any news source?
Well, I think it comes down to faith in the First Amendment. You know, free speech protects the right to lie just as much as it protects the right to truth. And we rely on those news outlets that have proven themselves reliable in the past. You know, we talk about the history of newspapers and stuff like that. And you could cite examples from the 19th century of the venomous lies told about various candidates for political office back then in a very robust newspaper environment. And I think we're going to always have these outliers. I mean, we have some vicious, you know, print publications today.
But doesn't concentration make it a different issue? When people own so many stations, they're not really outliers anymore. We're talking about almost 20% of the country covered by this one owner.
Well, I think that's a problem. But again, it comes back to our basic, you know, regulatory landscape for broadcast. There are different ways we can regulate broadcast and use of the spectrum so that ownership isn't really a problem. Verizon has 100% coverage of the United States for cell phones, mostly, and yet we don't worry about Verizon ever doing anything like this because they don't control the content of what's going over their spectrum.
Well, David Folkenflik, last word goes to you tonight. Sinclair, as you say, unbowed. The program is going to go ahead, modified in some way. We're not exactly sure how. It's going to be called News, and it's going to be on tomorrow night. What kind of response do you expect?
I think it's going to energize people who came in angry at Senator Kerry and his anti-war activism. I think it's going to enrage those who are supporters of his or who feel that this is a dead letter issue. You know, John Lieberman's right about this. Sinclair's going to be, I guess in your words, unbowed. It's both a branding opportunity for them as an alternative to liberal media, and it is devoutly what is believed in the upper echelons of the company. So, you know, why back off?
And it will be a done deal on the eve of the presidential election. David Folkenflik with the Baltimore Sun, thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to join you.
Jesse Walker at Reason Magazine, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for being here. Glad to be here.
And Ernest Miller with the Yale Law School Information Society Project, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jonathan Lieberman, are you going to stay in the news business?
Yes, absolutely, Tom. I'm going to find a job reporting.
Good luck, my friend, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.